welcome once again to Raging and Eating. This is Rossi, better known as Chef Rossi, owner and executive chef of the Raging Skillet. And here we are again. Welcome to my edible brain. No. This is not Silence of the Lambs. I don't mean welcome to eating my brain. And this is not Jeffrey Dahmer either. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Did you watch that series? Oh my God, that dude was disgusting. Anyway, don't get me started on that because I just was starting to forget about it. But I think there's a special place in hell for people who are serial killers. But then I think it's even worse if they do what Jeffrey Dahmer did. And if you don't know about it, don't even find out. It's just too disgusting. But that's not what I want to talk about today. I don't want to talk about serial killers and cannibals and all that. I want to talk about you and me and life and being free and being glorious and being alive. And also the fact that I have been cooking my tuchus off lately. I mean, really. Let's see. The last time I talked to you guys, I was gearing up for a killer. I mean, killer in a good way, not in a Jeffrey Dahmer way. Bar mitzvah with lots of challenges because the bar mitzvah boy is allergic to soy. The bar mitzvah boy's mother was allergic to gluten. And so, you know, there was challenges. And you know what? I've discovered I like a challenge. I mean, what good is life if there's no challenge? It would be so boring. I remember when I was cooking in restaurants, I'd been catering for a while. And everyone said, well, you can't call yourself a chef if you've never cooked in a restaurant. And I was like, well, what's the difference? You know, I cooked for 200 people at the Hurwitz wedding. What's the difference between that and cooking for 200 people in a restaurant? Well, it turns out there's a huge difference. So much so that I got to think restaurant chefs, when they start catering, they must ruin all of their first events, and vice versa. Catering people, when they jump behind the line in a restaurant, must also have a similar experience. But the reason is, like, when you're cooking for catering, it's like, let's say you have filet mignon for 200. Well, so in your kitchen, you are marinating it and searing it and grilling it, kind of everything all on the outside. So you've seared it or grilled it and marked the outside. And then you take it to the wedding, and in maybe like a half hour, possibly longer before dinner time, you want to have time to rest it and carve it. That's when you put it in a proofing cabinet, which is what we call the temporary ovens we use for catering. And then you crank it out for 200 all at once. But with a restaurant business, then you go in and it's like you're behind the line and you all of a sudden have to fire five filet mignons. And then 10 minutes later, 10. And then 10 minutes later, 15. And then 10 minutes later, two filet mignons. And it just go like that all night long. And you're just cooking up one, two, three, four, five pieces. But the thing is, maybe it's exciting the first day you do it, the first 20 days you do that particular dish, first 35 days, you know, it could be exciting for a while, but there comes a point when you're doing the same menu and you've done it like thousands of times that it actually gets to be this weird combination of high stress and mad boredom. And all the restaurant folks out there will know exactly what I mean. But with catering, it doesn't ever really have a chance to get boring, at least for me, because it's a different menu every time we go to work. And maybe if you work for a catering business or you have a catering business where you only have like five menus and you say pick one, maybe that might get boring after a while. But I will never do that because I want my life to stay exciting. And I want everyone else's life to stay exciting. And I want my food to stay exciting. And I do not want to cook for anyone like Jeffrey Dahmer. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Don't ask me about that. All right, so we catered this awesome, awesome bar mitzvah. And we got to do lots of fun stuff. And I think I told you last week that every time I cater a bar mitzvah or a bas mitzvah, it is revenge for me from the horrible bas mitzvah that my parents gave me. No offense, Mom and Dad, I love you. I really do. And I know we'll meet again. And I know you're enjoying yourself at an all-you-can-eat buffet in heaven. But do not give your 12 and 13-year-old, I guess I was 12 or 13, I don't remember. Do not give your kid like that age a bar mitzvah or a bus mitzvah where the only food is like Swedish meatballs and stuffed cabbage. Come on. Kids don't want to eat that. They want to eat pizza and pasta and mozzarella sticks, things like that. Well, unless they're super progressive, actually. Some of these New York kids are really progressive. I had a bar mitzvah boy, I'm going to say about 10 years ago. And what did he want to eat on his bar mitzvah? He wanted tongue tacos. Yeah, tongue, you know, like the cow's tongue. He wanted tongue tacos. So, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, we would see that in the kosher deli counter, a big old tongue hanging over, and we would just kind of scream. But this kid, that's what he wanted. So we seared it and grilled it and cooked it up, and we made tongue tacos for him. And I never got over it. Like, what kind of 13-year-old kid wants tongue tacos? Well, this one did. What can I say? He was an adventurer. And my bar mitzvah boy the other night, he really wanted sushi in a huge way. I mean, when I was a kid, you could not get a kid to eat sushi. Raw fish? Oh no, they were running out the door. Give them pizza and keep the sushi to yourself. But no, this kid, that's what he wanted. And he wanted the Peking duck ice cream cones that I talked to you about before. I have so much to tell you. I'm all excited to tell you about my culinary adventures since the last time we chatted. So, what I want to start with is fried chicken. I cannot say fried chicken without getting my accent back from living in North Florida in the 70s. It always comes back. Just the same way I can't say Florida. It's always Flada, F-L-A-D-A. But I sort of just remembered living in Florida in the 70s every time I'm frying chicken. So there's a zillion, billion, trillion, or certainly several dozen ways to fry chicken. And I've probably done all of them. There's the way where you maybe season up your chicken, whatever you're frying, and dredge it in flour, which hopefully is a little bit seasoned, and dunk that in beaten egg, and then dunk that in breadcrumbs or back in the flour. That's one way. There's another way where you season up your chicken, and you just dunk it in the flour, and that's all you do. There's another way where you make like a batter. Think about all the zillions of ways, marinated in little apple cider vinegar. There's a million trillion ways, but or several dozen, like I said. Could be exaggerating about the million trillion. But I decided for a few different reasons that for a while there we were doing the dip in the flour and then dip in the egg and then dip in breadcrumbs method, and it came out great. But first of all, not everyone likes eggs, and I have had guests with egg allergies. Second of all, eggs cost a fortune right now, don't they? Forget about it. But I decided for a lot of different reasons I wanted to do a different kind of fried chicken because I'm special. And so I decided to do a marinated fried chicken so we can get a three-dimensional gorgeousness to it. And what I did was I made my special Chef Rossi Jewish white trash fried chicken marinade. And if you email me, I will give you the recipe. Or you could just listen to what I'm saying and jot it down with a pen and piece of paper. You know, whatever you want to do, float your boat. And don't ask me for precise amounts because that's not how I flow, you know. I got to have my mojo. I have to be free. And so should you. So I mix up some ketchup and some French's yellow mustard, and some Dijon mustard, and some maple syrup, I'm not kidding, and some Tabasco, I'm not kidding about that either. Think about all those flavors, already super yummy, right? And then I whisked in granulated garlic and onion powder, and Cajun spice, and paprika, and celery salt, and fresh ground pepper. And I whisked and I shimmied and I whisked and I shimmied and I shook my tushy all around. You know, I made a little dance. And then we took our boneless chicken breasts and our boneless chicken thighs. All the cool people want dark meat, myself included, but a lot of people like the lighter meat, so whatever your deal is, we had both. We marinated the chicken in my marinade. It was lovely. And then I made up a big old batch of seasoned flour. So I went with gluten-free flour so everyone could eat it. I used the Red Mills, by the way. Not bad, but whatever one you like. I'm not advertising for you, Red Mills. You're not paying me, so bug off. But I still love you. So I mixed the gluten-free flour and I gave it some paprika and some salt and pepper and some celery salt and some Cajun spice, all that good stuff, and some ground cumin and some ground coriander, because why not? And I mixed in some gluten-free breadcrumbs so I had texture. I did a panko breadcrumb so I had nice texture. And then I took my marinated chicken and dredged it in the flour. And then we fried it off in deep oil, canola oil, my darlings. And we got a gorgeous, gorgeous fried chicken, but we didn't cook it entirely in the oil because we didn't want to have it be over-fried. We got it till it was golden and gorgeous. And then we laid it out on a sheet pan on over some parchment paper, stuck it in the oven at 350 for about 7 to 10 minutes, just so it was cooked through nice. And I think it took about 7 minutes, if I recall, but it depends on the size of the chicken, of course. Now, if I was telling you this story and my sister was listening to me, she would immediately start imitating a chicken, because my sister Yaya loved to speak in the voice of a chicken. It was kind of her thing, like her exclamation point on life. So she would hear me telling you all about this fried chicken, and right away she'd be going, boop, 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 bakash, bakash, bakackle, making her chicken noises. And, you know, every family has their things, you know, like mine, I guess basically our thing was that my mother really liked to expel enormous amounts of gas in public, generally on the line of supermarket when people were trapped behind her, myself included. And my sister's thing was that she really preferred to speak in the voice of a chicken. It just kind of gave her pleasure. So I think everyone in my family tried to get her to stop doing it, but it was her, that was her mojo. And there came a point that you just had to let her go with the chicken flow. You know what I mean? So there's worse things you could do. Jeffrey Dahmer is much worse. Far better to speak in the voice of a chicken than to kill people and eat them, you know? You just got to think about life that way. We could compare it to Jeffrey Dahmer. Let's say you're really mad at your ex-girlfriend. You're mad at her because she didn't fold the laundry or she didn't wash the dishes. Well, that would be your present girlfriend. So we're talking about your ex-girlfriend. Well, let's say you're mad at your present girlfriend, since we're starting there, because she didn't fold the laundry and she didn't wash the dishes. And you think, I really have a lousy girlfriend because she won't fold the laundry and she won't wash the dishes. But think of it this way. She could be Jeffrey Dahmer, in which case she would have killed you and eaten you. So far better that she didn't fold the laundry and not wash the dishes. You've got to put life into perspective that way, right? But I digress, par usual. Anyway, so my fried chicken came out gorgeous, and we cooked it all up in the kitchen, and we brought it to the party. And then what we did to make a really exciting thing, I did one of my famous floating suppers. Now, the way a floating supper works is, instead of having to sit down at a table for a sit-down dinner, we are stuck having to make a conversation with 6, 7, or 8, 9, or 10 people that you're stuck with at the table for an hour or two. I like to do a floating supper where you can have like a table sprinkled around so everyone, if they're tired, they have a place to go sit. But during what would be the dinner hour, small plates just get passed all around wherever anyone is. And sometimes I'll pass everything in Chinese containers too. And in this case, rather than even renting the plates and getting into all of that, my bar mitzvah mom picked up something I suggested, and I still suggest to everyone, those great biodegradable bamboo plates. They're fabulous, they're light, they're good for the environment, and everyone loves the way they look, you know, it's a win-win. So what we did was we took a waffle, toasted it up, of course, cut it in half, and we put the two halves of the waffle on the plate, because it's a small six inch plate. That's a hard thing to say, right? It's a good thing I'm not heterosexual. Don't get me started on that. I'm not going to go there, you little dirty mind. I'll say it one more time. 6 inch. There, I said it better, right? Anyway, the 8 inch is easier to say for some reason. Anyway, so I digress. Took the waffle, cut it in half, put it on the 6 inch plate, and put a couple of pieces of my gorgeous fried chicken on top of that. And then what I did was I took a gorgeous organic dark amber maple syrup and I whisked in some Frank's hot sauce. But you could also whisk in Tabasco. Either gives you the same thing that I'm looking for, which is a spicy hot maple deliciousness. So that I drenched fried chicken and waffles with it, and out they went to all the guests. The waiters took them cascading around with beautiful fried chicken and waffles. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Off they went. Everyone loved it. And I was ready for every issue because we had some buffalo cauliflower made by our darling sous chef, Jeremy, who I keep calling Jeremiah, even though it's not his name because I like the way it sounds coming out of my mouth. Jeremiah was, well, you know what I mean. And we also had some beautiful gluten-free waffles, of course, for all of the gluten-free guests. So it was a gorgeous and exciting thing. You know, a floating supper is so exciting. Let's say you're going to have a party and you're worried that it'll be boring. So instead of making people sit down at a dinner table or go to the buffet or something, instead make these plates and put miniature versions of dinners on them and pass them all around. So by the time you eat three of these plates, you've had 1.5 dinners. It's a lot of food, right? Anyway, so we were super jazzed sending out our fried chicken and waffles with the hot maple. That was a sexy, sexy thing. We also had to do a few things, nods, darling. Now I'm no longer Southern. To children, what do children like to eat? Because believe it or not, not all children like to eat fried chicken and waffles. Amazing, right? So we sent out what children always want to eat, which is pasta. But we put it in a Chinese container, so fusilli, which is a great fun shape and easy to eat. And the fusilli had some roasted vegetables, not too many because some kids are like, ew, vegetables. And then we just did a gorgeous, thick, delicious marinara, hot marinara poured over the pasta in the Chinese container. And out it went. And all the kids were like, pasta. We sprinkled it with Parmesan, but we had some without Parmesan because we heard somebody was allergic to dairy, but that person never seemed to materialize. So I'm sure he exists, but I never met him. Anyway, so out went the gorgeous pasta in the Chinese containers, and everyone thought it was adorable. So already we're filling people up like crazy, right? They've had pasta, they've had chicken and waffles, they had a gazillion hors d'oeuvres, including my soy-free, gluten-free Peking duck that I talked about last week. They had sushi, even the bar mitzvah boy, of course, already a lot of food. But we weren't done yet. No, 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 my darling. So we took some flank steak that I marinated for 24 hours in our all-purpose marinade, because I'm always using scallions and chives and thyme and rosemary to garnish trays and to garnish my buffets. I'm an edible garnish kind of girl. So we save all that stuff that we don't use, and then we puree the rosemary and the thyme and the scallion and the chive and whatever else we have. Sometimes we also have some parsley. Sometimes, what else do we throw in it? We throw in oregano, fresh oregano, you know, whatever we have, with olive oil and garlic, and we keep it in quarts in the freezer, and then when we're ready, that becomes our fantastic steak marinade. It's a beautiful thing. So we marinated our flank steak in our gorgeous herb marinade, and everything was lovely and right with the world. And then we grilled it in the kitchen. So here, not working in a restaurant, we grilled all the flank steaks in the kitchen. So they left the kitchen what you would call black and blue, which is nothing to do with Jeffrey Dahmer. Black and blue, like seared and grill marked and gorgeous on the outside, totally more than rare, basically raw on the inside. Out they went to the party like that. And then we finish them in the oven and bring them to a perfect and beautiful medium rare. And we let it rest, because one thing you want to know with ex-lovers and relationships and with beef, that you really want to let it rest. Especially beef needs to rest before you slice it, or else you get all that blood red juice coming out, and it's really, really unappetizing. And so we let it rest, and then we sliced it, and we were ready, of course, for anyone who didn't want it medium rare, because there's always end pieces that wind up being more cooked. You can always throw it back in for another few minutes if someone wants that, but very rarely do they want it any other way. And so our beautiful plate had this gorgeous marinated flank steak with my beautiful Chef Rossi Jewish Peter Luger style steak sauce. I can't really say Peter Luger style. I just said it, so I can say it, but it's a very different recipe, but inspired by the great Peter Luger. And if you're ever in New York, you have to go to Brooklyn and have a steak at Peter Luger. Unless you're a vegetarian, then I would run madly in the opposite direction. That place is not for you. And so on the plate, I put my Jewish Chef Rossi Peter Luger inspired steak sauce and tater tots. Tater tots are the great equalizer of the universe. The reason is, first of all, they're gluten-free, which is kind of exciting, and they're vegan, which is kind of exciting. So here is this thing that you think of as maybe being unhealthy. I don't know. Turns out everyone can eat it. The lactose intolerant, the vegans, the vegetarians, the gluten-free, the meat eaters, children, adults, everyone can eat it, and everyone loves it. And so, you know, there's lots of things you can do with it, too. I was in Rochester a few years ago, just before the pandemic blew in. And Rochester seems to have elevated tater tots. They serve it in every meal in every way. Tater tot nachos covered in cheese, like you name it. There was something I tried called the Rochester garbage plate. Now, every time I go somewhere, I try to understand, like, what do you go there to eat? So that I know if someone wants me to cater their wedding and they're from Rochester, I know what to say. So I kept seeing these signs, the garbage plate, and so we had to go find out what it was. And the garbage plate was like everything on the menu on a plate. One place it was cheeseburger, baked beans, hot dog, tater tots, fries, and I'm missing something. It was some sort of a mayonnaise-y thing on there too, Lord, like a coleslaw, mayonnaise-y coleslaw or something. I forget. It was just like 1,000 things on the plate. And it looked like a buffet on one plate of things you might have in a bar in Rochester. And I imagine that's how it came about. Oh, the mayonnaise-y thing was macaroni salad. Can you imagine this on a plate? Macaroni salad, tater tots, cheeseburger, hot dog, fries. I think there were baked beans. I mean, holy moly. But so what I said to the bride at the time was, well, why don't we have a deconstructed Rochester garbage plate and that'll become our buffet? So turns out to be a pretty great idea. Think about it. But I digress, par usual. So this was our beautiful grilled steak with my Jewish Peter Luger inspired steak sauce and tater tots with a sprinkle of salt, just a little sprinkle, a beautiful, beautiful thing. Now, do you want to hear about my Chef Rossi Jewish Peter Luger inspired steak sauce? Because I know that you do. So I mix up whole grain mustard and, just to kind of white trash it up a little bit, some French's yellow mustard too. And I add some ketchup because this is how I go, and some A1 steak sauce. I put A1 everywhere. I love it. And some Worcestershire. And some of my down-home barbecue sauce, but you can also use any of your favorite barbecue sauces, as long as it's thick and awesome and down-home. And I whisk that up, check the seasoning. Usually I give it some Tabasco to raise the heat, a tiny drizzle of apple cider vinegar to get a sweet and tangy thing going on. And then I give it some maple syrup or molasses so I get a sweet and tangy and spicy blend. And I think that's pretty much it. A little salt and pepper, sometimes a little celery salt. You get this gorgeous, yummy steak sauce. It's pretty fantastic, if I do say so myself. And I just did. So, as you can see, we cranked out serious amounts of food, and it was a fabulous thing. The only downside, which I always forget whenever I do a mitzvah, a bar mitzvah, or a bas mitzvah, is that the kids are running around doing all these games with the DJ and the dancing, and then they're usually eating all this stuff that comes in, like popcorn and ice cream and snow cones and donuts and all these zillions of things. And getting them to eat actual food is really, really hard. So we certainly try. We got them to eat the pasta. We got some of the kids to eat the waffles without the chicken. We got some of the kids to eat the steak. We got most of the kids to eat a tater tot or two. But It really is a hard thing to get kids to eat while they're having a mitzvah. And I guess I don't blame them. You know, you're running around, you got your friends there, the DJ's got you up and dancing and playing games, and there's like all kinds of basketball hoops and snow cone machines and popcorn machines. There's lots of distraction. So why should you behave yourself? You have the whole rest of your life to behave yourself. Not at my bas mitzvah. I had no popcorn and no snow cones and no basketball hoop and no DJ. I had the sisterhood and the Swedish meatballs and the stuffed cabbage. And I believe that they might have been playing some Israeli folk music in the background. But more than likely, I just imagined that as wishful thinking, because what I was really listening to was probably my mother singing, which was something to experience. My mother could not sing to save her life, but she loved to sing. Anyway, but I love you, Mom, and I miss you, and I would give anything, anything to hear you sing again. So I take every rotten thing I ever said about you back, and you can fart to your heart's content. I would love to have you come back, and I'd love to wait online in a supermarket with you and let you fart your brains out, because I know you love doing that. The best defense is a good offense. That was kind of her motto. But I digress, par usual. So, the moral of the story is, no matter how rotten your boyfriend or girlfriend is, they're not Jeffrey Dahmer, I hope, for your sake. So give them a break. If they don't wash the dishes and they don't fold the laundry, at least they're not eating you and killing you and killing you and eating you, whatever. I think usually the killing happens first. You know, it's not nice. And Jeffrey Dahmer, rotten hell. And try to do some awesome food and make everybody happy, and life is short. And if you're doing a big kids party and you do want to bring in a popcorn machine and a snow cone machine and all of these things, consider not opening up all those machines until the kids have eaten a little dinner first. Because once you do, forget about it. But I would do the same thing. If I was 12 or 13 years old and there was a popcorn machine and a snow cone machine, I'd be like, food? Forget about it. This is so much more exciting. But I digress, par usual. Now, last show, I said goodbye to you, and I forgot to say my famous mantra. And for anyone who noticed, 10 points for you, but I was surprised that nobody noticed but me. Right after the show, I said, oh my God, I forgot to sign off, as I always do. So consider this a double sign-off. Food is love, and so are you. And if you heard the show last week, I didn't say that. I think I said go and eat something delicious or do something delicious, or I don't know. I know I didn't say anything about Jeffrey Dahmer, though. Anyway, here we are and here you are. It was fabulous talking with you, par usual. Try some marinated fried chicken. It's a yummy thing. And the gluten-free doesn't hurt it in the least. It's gorgeous. Try serving some Chinese food containers full of pasta at your next kid's party. And whatever you do, be nice to your girlfriend and nice to your boyfriend and nice to your children, because life is short and there's too much cruelty all around as it is. All right. Now I'm going to say it twice because I didn't say it last week. Food is love. And so are you.